Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you want to design a marathon training program or you're curious what planets are visible in tonight's sky, Meta AI has the answers. It can also summarize your class notes, visualize your ideas, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, everyone. This is Helena Hart. Welcome back to my Master Your Magnetism podcast. I'm talking with Jack Butler today. He's a transformational coach. Welcome, Jack. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me back. It's always great to be here. Look forward to connecting with your audience.
Yeah, we actually have a really interesting topic today, something I haven't talked about before in all my years of doing these interviews, and that is how to relate with someone who has a different viewpoint than you. And we were chatting a little bit before we started recording, and I believe you said that you know people that have stopped talking to family members or cut off friends or certain relationships due to this, and that isn't always necessary. I think sometimes maybe that's warranted, but you were explaining it in a way where you could have a better understanding of yourself and the other person. So we're going to dive into all of that today. Is that right?
Yeah, I look forward to unpacking this with you. I just know that it's a pain point for people individually in the way that you're talking about. Like maybe they felt they had to cut someone out. And obviously, I think the least we could do that, the better. But it's also a pain point kind of at large. Like you probably noticed this, that we are struggling to understand about half of the other side of the population. And so anything that we can do to contribute to people understanding and growing empathy, I think is a good thing.
I completely agree. And I don't know really anything about this topic in terms of what to do to change this. So I'm looking forward to learning a few things here myself today. Before we get into it, I know you've opened up a few more spots for some private coaching clients. So I'll include a link to apply for that or to get the coaching. That'll be the first link in the show notes. And they just have to put my name in the section that said, where did you hear about me? Or the promo code section, just my first name, Helena, H-E-L-E-N-A. Is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Perfect. If there's anyone that's resonating with what we're talking about here today, I would love to hear from you. It's a great opportunity to deepen your own inner work in this territory.
Okay, great. So let's dive into this topic. What's the first thing you have to say about people with differing viewpoints? What do you hear from people who first come to you and they're struggling with this?
The first thing I tend to hear from people is judgment. They have a judgment on someone else, and that maybe it's enough of a judgment that it's stopping them wanting that person to be in their life, or they've maybe significantly downshifted a relationship. This is subtle territory in that sometimes, particularly if you've been a people pleaser or a shapeshifter, or you haven't owned your power and boundaries, right? Sometimes learning to say, no, I don't want this person in my life, or no, I don't want to be in relationship with this person is definitely a developmental move and a thing that we should honor, you know, and that's quite a big weapon, right? To cut someone out completely, let's say certainly like a friend or family member. So if we're saying we want to do that the least possible, what's the other path? The other path is hard, but it's how when you're in judgments about other people, are you able to relax that judgment to bring some curiosity in and to see, can I get a little bit more curious about why they might think differently than me? So really the first major maneuver here, you know, it's a bit of a fancy word, subjectification, which basically means I tend to think that other people should think and feel and behave in ways that I do. And we might have to relax that impulse to actually then get curious, like, oh, why does this person think this way? Or what is this person's experience? What has them feel this way? So we sort of have to almost get over ourselves a little bit that we kind of know the answers and know how people should think, feel, and behave in order to get a little bit over there and get curious about what is actually going on. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to agree with them. Often you're not going to agree with them, but this is learning how can you disagree with someone, but also respect their humanity and respect that we're all individual people and with individual consciousness on a different paths, and we've all had different lived experiences. And the more that we can actually hear those from each other, generally, the more we can respect and be in contact with each other. And generally, the more we like ourselves. That's the advantage of this.
That is so true. So understanding where they may be coming from, what they've been through or experienced that got them to this point, rather than just going with the judgment right off the bat. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to make this particularly political, but just straight off the top, often if people hear, oh, so-and-so supports this candidate or they voted for this person, mm-hmm. there's an assumption about what that is. You know, either that person might be stupid or evil or misogynistic, or you kind of fill in the blanks. And actually, we don't really know why they're doing that. And in a system that's got very few people you can vote for, it's like, yeah, often people might be voting in spite of sharing some views with you about why that might not be the best thing, but it's like the best of some really limited opportunities. And somehow in this age of kind of social media polarization, it seems like we're being called to get back into contact with people in a more empathic way, to kind of fight the filter bubbles and the way that the algorithmic incentives tend to feed us things that we like. So we're sort of getting a little bit more into these cloistered off worlds. And this is sort of an opportunity to say, hey, there's actually something rich about reaching out to someone who you don't really feel this part of your tribe and trying to get into their world. And en masse, we might need to do that, I honestly believe, to sort of get to our next level of evolution as a society.
That's so true. I see it on social media all the time. Somebody will post something, a support of a candidate is a great example, and they'll say, unfollow me if you have a problem with this, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really necessary. Do you see that as well?
I totally get that. Yeah, I don't think it is necessarily necessary. I mean, show me one person that thinks and feels and behaves exactly as you do. Even your best friends, even your sibling that maybe you grew up with or a partner you've been with for a long time. There's lots of difference there. So part of this is the more I get to be me, the more I truly honor my authentic desire, my authentic perspective, the more I can maybe get out of the way to champion your authentic desire and your authentic perspective. It's sort of a both and maneuver. The more that I'm real about me, the more it might be okay for you to be you, and for us to have many points of difference, which inevitably there will be. The rub that makes this hard is that it often comes down to values differences. So the second maneuver here is, how do you actually grow the values that you value? Which might sound counterintuitive. It's sort of like most people, when they think and feel a certain way, there's some kind of value that sits beneath that. And if we can bring our curiosity and empathy, we might get to see what that value is. Like, oh, they're valuing tradition, or maybe they're valuing safety. Often if people act in defensive or protective ways, there's part of them at least that's valuing safety and is wanting to protect them. The more that we can be kind of sober and objective that that's what's happening with another person, the more easy it is to have a bit of compassion. Like, oh yeah, if I were really valuing safety, then I might be acting somewhat similar, or at least I can get why they're behaving in this difficult way. So the more we can grow, rather than just being, hey, these are my values and that's sort of it, it's like, great, these are your values. And can we start to just add just around the edges that maybe you can learn to value some other things, because it will make you a better leader. It will make you better as an employer and as a colleague, because you're going to come up against people that value slightly different things than you. And if you have no ability to value them, it's almost like you can't see the person. Because if you can't at all value the thing that someone else's value, it's really hard to have an open heart and curiosity and empathy about that person.
It's so true. There's so much we could talk about here. And I don't think you necessarily need to spend a bunch of time trying to understand the values of maybe some stranger on the internet or something like that. Right. It's my own personal, I don't have time for that. But like you said, sometimes people cut off family members or friends because they have differing viewpoints. And that's where you're saying that that might not be necessary, to just throw the whole friendship away because someone has a different viewpoint than you, right?
Yeah, because partly when you really get curious about yourself and other people, you might come to see, it's possible, that the things that you hold dearly, you didn't necessarily sort of go and meditate on a mountain for a year and really reflect on, you know, what are my core values and core beliefs? A lot of them came to you. Either they are inherited from your family structure, or they are kind of given to you through osmosis, or the people that you went to maybe school or college with, or the part of the world that you've lived in, or people that you've engaged in, you know, in your community and your work. And we all have different sets of lived experiences. What makes you absolutely know beyond any reasonable doubt that your values are the best values? What's to say that someone else values something completely different and that's just equally valid? So a lot of this is about validating other people, even when we don't readily identify with what it is that they are thinking and feeling and behaving and acting according to. That actually grows you as a person. It's easier to close off from people who have different values from you. It's harder to say, oh, actually, there's a little bit of friction here between the things that you most value and I most value. And how can I remain open-hearted? Wouldn't that be in our best version of ourselves? And we want to remain open-hearted to as many people as possible. Isn't that good for us? Isn't that the way that we want to walk in the world? Wouldn't it be good to feel connected to people, even those that don't think and feel like you? I think that's worth fighting for. It gives you more open-heartedness, more compassion, more connection, and less judgment, less closing off. And it's also more vulnerable, because in some ways it's easier to say, oh, you don't think and feel like me? Yeah, you're not really part of my tribe. I think we may be growing beyond that.
Yes, I really like what you said there. What are some first steps for someone who wants to be more open-hearted and open to actually connecting with someone, even if they don't share the exact viewpoints that you do?
So I would start with, what does it take to bring a little bit more curiosity? So really, this is a listening maneuver. What about if I just try to listen to this person, to hear their experience, to hear why they think and feel the way they do? And I'm not trying to persuade them, and I'm not even trying to be persuaded. What about if I approach it literally like I was then going to sit an exam, and the exam was called, how did that person think and feel? And you were going to give the most accurate description. So you're kind of listening in an impressionable way to take the other person in, and with the least resistance that you can find to what it is that they're actually saying. Now, this is difficult because for most of us, the resistance will come up, the judgment will come up, even maybe the trigger might come up if it's someone that is radically different than you. Our job is, as best we can, to kind of work with that and to stay oriented towards our curiosity about the other person. Because when you do that and you're actually able to play back how someone thinks and feels, you're already humanizing and validating them in some way. Because it's like you've taken them in enough that you can actually somewhat at least reproduce what they're saying. And people even do this in like a couples therapy sort of instance, right? So this doesn't have to be someone who's maybe completely on the other side of the political divide. This just might be someone that you're close with, as a family member or as a partner or as a work colleague. We can have you play back. So what did you just hear from that person? And if you are so in your own experience that you can't actually step outside and get curious about another person, it's hard to do this, right? So it actually forces you to slow down, to listen up. And sometimes the exercise, like if you're in something like imago therapy, you might even say to the other person, did I get it right? And they might say sort of yes and, like, yes, you got this and you didn't quite get that right. I didn't quite say this, I said that. And you get them to clarify. This leads us to what we call disagreeing accurately, which means I've got an accurate perception of what you're actually saying and thinking and feeling. It's much easier in the world of social media to have a parodied version or the worst version or least generous version of what someone thinks and feels, because that's easy to be in contact with. If I just dismiss this, oh, this person's evil, this person is XYZ, I don't really have to engage with you at that point. But it's actually harder to say, even if it's true that maybe this person has some views I want to challenge, how do I actually get close to their experience? What's informing this? Most people aren't stupid. By that, I mean, there are things that inform their experience and they've lived something that has perhaps taken them into a perspective. And if we actually want any ability to influence their perspective, perhaps there is some better place that we could go together. That comes from rapport and connection. It doesn't tend to come from judgment and shame. I think it's actually quite hard to shame and judge someone into a better perspective.
This is actually a masterclass, or it could be, on how to connect with anyone, whether or not they have a differing viewpoint, just listening to them with an open heart rather than projecting your judgments or your viewpoints on them or making assumptions that because they have this viewpoint, they must be this way or that way. Or maybe that's true in some cases, of course, and you just don't want to engage with that person anymore. But this could really help no matter who you're relating with. If you're on a date with someone who you don't know very well yet, or just meeting people in the world, this could really help you connect with people on all levels, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually think that even though it can feel good at one level to be righteous and to be right and to be believing that you have superior values to other people, I think most of us, what we actually want is to feel more intimacy and connection with more people, to actually feel more part of the tribe and less elitist or superior, that it doesn't actually serve you to walk in the world in a way that you think you got it all going on and you're great and everyone else is somehow like a step down or doesn't get it. It's probably unlikely in an objective sense that any of us is actually as good as we might think we are in that sense. So we actually need each other, because other people are your eyes and ears in ways that you can't know because you haven't walked their path. So there's something in this for all of us to actually move in the world in a more connected, less defended way. And if I can hear someone say something that sounds radically strange to me at one level, like, oh God, I don't even know why you would think that. But rather than go to judgment, let me get curious, like, oh, why actually do you think that? And let me listen and stay open and attuned. It's a beautiful opportunity for us because it puts us in our hearts and our truths. I actually get to hear more truth. If I can be with you and hear you and hear your lived experience rather than just kind of write you off and judge you, I'm getting smarter and wiser. I actually hear what's going on.
Right. It's helping you to grow. It's maybe helping your own personal development. It doesn't mean you have to marry that person or continue dating that person or take on their viewpoint. It doesn't mean that you have to start believing the way they believe. It's just about understanding where they're coming from. I really like that. This is great information. What do you think about people dating? I know a lot of women or people who listen to the podcast are interested in the dating and relationship realm. Do you think people could be in a relationship that have differing political views or even religious backgrounds or things like that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on
that. Yeah. So I think it's possible. It might be a slightly harder path. So it might be that it's generally easier to find someone that the deeper values are aligned. I also think it depends a little bit on your stage of development, sort of meaning the more that you are in this territory of, I can value different types of values, not just maybe the ones that I came in with or that I developed in my younger life, that could point to a richer possibility of being with someone who has a slightly different value set. I just don't know, like if you were taking one thing from this, I'm not sure it would be that. I would say generally orient towards people, if you're going to have a lot of day-to-day contact with them, either as like a co-founder or as a partner, where maybe the values alignment is more strong and natural. But the thing we're talking about itself is a type of value, right? The ability to want to understand people that are different than you, that is a value. And I actually think it's a value at large that we could maybe do with more right now. When people are squaring off in their camps, we actually might do well to find more people who are like, oh, it's okay, whatever you think and feel about that, I'm actually curious and I want to be with it. From a dating perspective, one of the ways that this could show up is, you know, we talk about traditional, modern, and postmodern consciousness. Again, these can kind of seem like fancy phrases, but people who have a more traditional view of relationship might even come from a perspective that the community arranges for you to be in some, you know, marriage or partnership with someone. Or traditional values might be that we are subsuming our relationship within a bigger, say, religious framework. That's a certain type of sensibility. Someone who has a much more postmodern sensibility is probably going to be saying, I want the relationship to grow me. I want us to maybe be in some therapy together at some point. I want to use the relationship to heal. There's much more of like, we're on a journey and we're on that journey together. They're just two quite different ways of orienting to relating to someone. So that probably wouldn't be a good compatibility fit. I think it's generally easier with these kind of worldviews to really be within the same worldview with someone, because otherwise where you put your attention, what you think matters, what you think's important is likely to be misaligned. So I would probably say practice what we're talking about everywhere, but most practice it with people that have a greater difference with you. And perhaps from a dating perspective, find people where the center of gravity of their values does actually align with yours.
Yeah, I love what you said there. That makes things a lot easier. I was just curious about that because I do hear from women. My podcast audience, as you know, is mostly women. So yes. I do hear from a lot of women who have started dating a guy, or maybe they're in a relationship, but there's some differing viewpoint or differing value.
Yes.
And that causes a lot of friction and conflict. So I was just curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I hear that. A couple of things I could say about that. So one is actually generationally, I think this is going to be an even bigger issue because the data seems to be showing that young women under the age of 25 are currently the most liberal group to have ever lived. And young men under 25 are actually about as conservative, and sometimes they're even saying more conservative than men over 55. That hasn't really happened before. And you know, obviously it's not just men and women that date. There's all kind of combinations and non-binary and all that accepted. But it is, I think, going to be creating an interesting context for some of this stuff to be playing out. The other thing that I get a lot is where maybe the woman is more of a spiritual or growth or inner work path, and the guy is not that interested, but he's pretty good in the other domains. Maybe he's a good provider, and maybe they have fun together, and they both like to travel and adventure, and maybe he makes good money so he can support this and contribute to it. But when it comes to like going to meditation or yoga, or perhaps going to something like therapy, he's not really open to it. And so the woman's like, oh, he's great in all these ways, but there's this thing that I would love to share with him that he's not really open to. And how do you find your true discernment about that? And I think that can be tricky territory. Often it will come down to what you really value. Like if something is so central to your life that to not be able to share it with someone kind of feels like they're missing the core of who you are, that might not be sustainable. But I have also known women where they're like, you know what? Yeah, this stuff, I like it, but I also get to do X, Y, Z with him, all these things. And I do these other things with my girlfriends. And that doesn't actually feel like a huge compromise to me. Sure, if he turned around tomorrow and said, I'd love to join you in yoga class, I would love it. But that's not really on the table. And rather than get focused on what's missing, I'm actually going to energize what is here, and what's here is enough. I think the difficulty in this area is when actually it belies a difference in values that's sort of getting manifested in different interests. You know, if you're really into craft beer and he's not, that's probably fine. If you've really got this sort of much more postmodern inner work orientation to life, and he's actually got a very traditional mindset, then the thing that's rubbing up is actually like a deeper values issue. And that is probably going to be hard to live with that.
It's so true. I think we could do a whole episode just on this, actually. It's so interesting to me. I hear from a lot of women who are obviously into self-growth and personal development work. Yes. And you don't necessarily need that in a guy. Oh gosh, I could just go on forever about this. I don't want to take this down such a tangent. I just think of my own husband, the most amazing partner, always makes the right decision, always concerned about doing the right thing. Just such an amazing guy, such a perfect partner. I don't know how I got so lucky. He's never read a self-help book. He's never read a coach. coach. He's open to counseling. Of course, he'd be very open. He's very interested in what I do. He listens to all my interviews and all that. He's very interested in it, but he personally has never gone on a retreat. It's like he didn't really have a lot to heal from. He's just kind of a happy guy who lives in the real world, and he's an incredible partner. And I want women to be open to that possibility. They say, right, I want a man who's done the work, and I hear all these buzzwords. And it's like, what about a guy who's just happy and he's a great partner and he's got a regular job? There's all different kinds of guys out there. And sometimes the spiritual guys are not the most emotionally available, I've certainly found. Sure. I mean, there's some that are and there's some that aren't, just like every other category of men. And so being into personal development doesn't make you automatically available and doesn't necessarily mean they're open to commitment, open to a commitment with you. You know, people really conflate that. I'd love to talk more about that in another episode. But yeah, if you're super into that, you don't necessarily need a guy who's super into that. Like you said, maybe you do that with your girlfriends, or maybe at some point he wants to join. But if the relationship dynamic is wonderful in every other aspect, why do you need that? That's my personal opinion. I know a lot of people probably disagree with that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It makes sense to me. I think it ultimately comes back to what is most important to you, right? So is it possible that there's someone for whom that is a deal breaker because that's just authentically a deal breaker? Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
But I actually think, what you're pointing to is probably the right possibility for a lot of people. And you've probably even seen this on YouTube and other platforms where people will sort of take all of these requirements, and they do it both directions, men and women, but let's just, since we're talking about women, so like, okay, so the guy's got to be this and he's got to make this much and he's got to have this kind of meditation practice. And it's like, it's kind of talking about a unicorn. That's not the right word, is it? You're talking about, you know, a 1 in 1 million possibility. And sure, you can live your life like you want to hold out for that, but it's probably not going to bring you what you think. And what might bring you more of what you think is actually finding more sobriety about what really matters. And actually, I think what you're pointing to is if there's a good dynamic between you, and if there's a dynamic where you can get along and work together, right? Whether that's like you kind of raising a family, or whether you're business partners or just simpatico careers. And if you can come through conflict together, I think that stuff is huge. And lots can be done with that. That is probably much more important than whether you can go to meditation class together. Because if you go to meditation class together, but actually you can't find each other and practically and creatively figure things out, and you get disrupted by conflict and you can't heal from that or repair from it, that's not going to work. I know that from personal experience and clients' experiences. Be careful what you want for. It's not about not being authentic. It's sort of like being authentic, but in a grounded way and in a way that maybe puts attention on the things that most matter. And I personally still think I'm learning a lot about this. Maybe many of us are. What most matters might not be some of those more surface activities. It's actually more about the kind of underlying ways of being together and how do they fit.
We should definitely do an episode on this. I think this is something that's important to talk about. Yeah. What does going to meditation and spiritual classes and stuff have to do with a man's emotional availability towards you and his interest level towards you? I just hear from so many women who get so hung up on these spiritual guys. He's so into self-growth and personal development, but his actions are not those of somebody who is interested in her and treating her right and moving things forward towards the committed relationship she wants. So those are the things that should maybe be at the top of your list. So I don't want to tell people what to put at the top of their list, but those are the important things. All that other stuff, you work that out later. Or like you said, if the value is that you want to feel safe, you want to feel understood, you could get that value or need met through someone, not necessarily through those activities. So I could just talk forever about that. And I know there's just so many people out there that still want that spiritual guy, but I think it's important to talk about that. That's not necessarily, like you said, going to fulfill all these things you want in a relationship.
Yeah, no, I hear it. It sounds wise to me. The one that I also hear a lot is, let's say, the woman who's really attracted to what the guy does, like maybe he's a CEO or he's professor or founder or something. And so they have this good connection about work, and there is sort of affiliation or collaboration, or maybe there's even a bit of like mentor mentee. Sometimes there's also a bit of pedestaling that's perhaps unconsciously happening there. But then if you look at the data, the guy is, to your point, he's not pursuing a relationship, right? He's definitely interested to have this person in his life, but he's not looking for something monogamous, which probably they are. He's not escalating it. He's not consistent. He's not any of those things, but they're stuck on it. And the fear is, if I kind of sober up, then I might actually have to let this go, even as a sort of professional connection, because it's kind of taking that romantic energy away from another possibility. And so this can be confusing to people, but I've seen people in these situations for years where it's sort of like, oh yeah, he's sort of your kind of in your head boyfriend, but he's not really in a relationship with you. Someone else would describe as a relationship. And there's loads of conversation about work. There's not really the other pieces. There's not like a grounded togetherness. There's not a planning a life together, yada, yada. So yeah, I like what you're saying. I think it's right.
You totally read my mind. I was just going to go there, actually. Yes. Yeah, because I hear that it's like somebody that's so impressive. They're at the top of their field. They're so smart. All these things that can, like you said, make you put that person on a pedestal. But where are they in terms of their emotional availability or their interest level in you? And yeah, women can stay stuck on guys like that for years. And then, of course, all the available guys who are actually interested in pursuing her for real don't measure up. They're not as impressive. They don't have these outer qualities. It's like he has these qualities she finds attractive, but he doesn't have the commitment, like you said, or the desire to pursue her consistently. And so we don't want you to stay stuck on men like that. I know you're an expert in helping women break free from those kind of patterns too, right?
A lot of it is that's not a very sexy or common word, but cultivating sobriety, being able to see something for what it is. There might be the fantasy of what you want. We all have fantasies and ideas about what life could be or should be. But then there's also the data, the simplicity, as hard as it can be, of what is actually in front of you. And if you've known this guy for several years and he doesn't want to make you his girlfriend, then he doesn't want to make you his girlfriend, much less a partner. And so that might be heartbreaking. It might be disappointing. It might be too much for you to confront in this moment. But, you know, this expression, the truth sets you free. It's like the truth is he's not that into you. And he's allowed to not be that into you. And by the way, if we also just get sober, a lot of guys who are at the top of their game with their career are a little less invested sometimes in relationship, because it's not easy to spend 80 hours a week being a CEO and then spend 10 hours with your partner and 10 hours with your kids and 10 hours at the gym. It's like there's only so much time and energy to go around. So sometimes there can also be that sobriety of like, wow, I really, really admire this guy and he's not available to me. And I might have to really just let that impact my heart. And again, I'm not saying any of this is easy, but this is your spiritual work, right? There, right? You talk about wanting to go to meditation retreats, you'll probably learn more in the process of unattaching to someone that's not available to you than you probably will from going to a meditation retreat.
I always say that I'm telling you, there are so many regular guys out there who aren't actually regular guys. They're extraordinary guys in terms of their partnership skills, and they might be very successful just because they're not a CEO or an entrepreneur, all these things that women think they want. And I understand that. I used to think when I was single, I wasn't out there dating yet, but I thought in my mind, well, I should probably look to date someone who has their own business too, so they can have a flexible schedule like me. We can go do things spontaneously during the week. I didn't even know what I wanted. Like, what did that have to do with someone's partnership skills and interest level in me, right? And so I understand the tendency to want to get very specific about these things that we think we want, but it doesn't help. It just slows you down, I think.
Yeah. Well, one thing, and just to maybe it kind of ties it back to where we started, there's a version of a dating profile that I see pretty commonly, which basically says, I want to date me. Sometimes people even say like me, colon, fun, adventurous, hardworking, athletic. And then they say you, fun, adventurous, hardworking, athletic. Now, in some ways you could say maybe that's smart because there'd be some compatibility. But actually a lot of what we're talking about is how to be with some difference, right? So relationship needs similarity and difference in order to be interesting and stimulating as well as safe and secure. So if you really think you're just trying to date this other gender version of yourself, I would invite you to get curious about whether that's kind of real and whether that's ultimately sort of have enough ongoing balance that it works as a partnership. Two super entrepreneurial people may just be off being super entrepreneurial, but not really having enough overlap in their Venn diagram. I've certainly had that experience of relationship where it's like, oh, if we actually get the data of what the Venn diagram is, there's not enough overlap. There's not enough center there for it to really hold well as a relationship. So just be mindful that if you're approaching life from like, I just want to meet the equivalent of me, you're missing out, I think, even if it's just having interesting dates, but probably someone that's going to be a good fit for you is going to be like you in certain ways in these deeper values and how they maybe think and feel about life. But on the surface, they may actually have some difference from you. And it might be actually a good balance. They don't need to be quite as athletic as you. They don't need to be quite as smart in exactly the same ways, because actually they have a different kind of smart that's also really good for you.
It's so true. Tom and I joke, I think we've done podcast episodes on this in the past, that we have nothing in common, but we are actually so similar in terms of, I guess you could say, like our essence, the way we approach things, the way we think about life. But on the surface, you would think, how are these two a match if you're just to look at two different online dating profiles or something like that? So I think all this is to say, just be open to maybe a different kind of person that you even knew existed, right?
I think so, because again, just being sober, let's say you're dating and you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. If you think you've got a type, you know, maybe that type hasn't quite worked out as a stabilized relationship. And so why not be open to something else? Your type is probably your unconscious attraction. You might always have that. Like some people, it's, oh yeah, blonde hair, blue eyes, that's it. Or like this kind of body type or this kind of look or this kind of way that they sound. But whether that's actual compatibility versus, you know, I call it unconscious attraction. It's not just my phrase, but sort of the animal initial, like, oh, am I drawn drawn to this person. It's a very different thing. So is it sober to walk around in a view of like, hey, this is my type, but actually I haven't found a relationship with this type for the last 40 years, or it hasn't quite worked out for me, or I'm not meeting guys like this. Maybe just get curious, just relax that script for a bit. And maybe there's some other things in your values metabolism, right? You can grow to appreciate some other things that may actually be more meaningful. So for instance, one thing is pacing. What is the pacing of this other person? Are they kind of like a fast processor, fast mover, faster talker? Or are they a slower processor, slower mover, often slower talker? It's not to do with intelligence, right? Einstein, plenty intelligent by anyone's standards, you know, slow paced person. That actually matching pacing can have a lot to do with how comfortable is it to hang out with someone. If there's too much of a pacing gap, generally the faster paced person feels slowed down, is like, could we leave already? Could we get out already? And the slower paced person is like, could you chill out? You're kind of high octane. And you know, you're never going to get the exact match. And actually a little bit of dynamism can be helpful there. But if that gap is too wide, it's hard for you to kind of feel at home with each other, which is often what people want. So that vector of reality might be way more meaningful than what you're sort of describing as your type, which is often, you know, maybe kind of physical attributes plus maybe some lifestyle attributes. So yeah, it's like you're using your dating to actually do exactly what we've been talking about in this, which is kind of opening you up to other people that maybe you wouldn't normally think to relate to.
I think I thought of 3 or 4 more episodes that we could record.
That's why you're a podcast host, Selena. Look at you, just like, yes. Boom, topic.
Yes.
Topic.
I do want to circle back to one thing before we close out that yep. I thought was really interesting before we got off on a, I think, very, very important tangent. So I'm so glad we talked about all of that other stuff.
Thanks for being
but
ready.
You said that there's some data that suggests that women under 25, I believe you said, are more liberal than ever, and men under 25 are more conservative than ever. What do they attribute that to? And is that something that changes over time as people get older? I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because I think that's something that's important to talk about.
Yeah. Just to clarify one thing. So the men being more conservative is effectively that they have very marginally moved to being slightly more liberal. But over that period of time, women have moved to being way more liberal. And therefore, they are now, in some estimations, kind of as conservative. Because generally, as people age, they tend to get more conservative. And that's more true also for men. So typically, the most conservative people in society might be older men. What they're attributing this to, there's many factors. So one is that actually, women are doing better educationally now, often in Western countries. So about 60% of those awarded master's degrees are women. More women are graduating medical school, for instance. There's lots of difference depending on the type of territory, right? So there's definitely more male engineers and probably more men going into tech and certain STEM things. But it sort of seems that actually there's a group of women's educational outcomes have pulled ahead in a fairly short period of time. So this is not to say that historically, obviously, there would, you know, I went to a Cambridge college that admitted women in, I don't know, the 60s or 70s, and that wasn't even particularly behind the time. So this is actually a bit of an untold story in some ways, that women's educational achievement, there's still a long way to go. And certainly in certain parts of the world, this wouldn't be true. But in a lot of the Western world, it's actually been a remarkable transformation. So that is one thing, because there is sometimes a correlation between education level and liberal attitudes. And certainly the longer that people stay in education, often that has an impact as well. I think the other thing is these sort of political shifts that are happening en masse. And one way, because this is complex territory, but one way to say is that maybe young men at the moment aren't doing great in terms of their career prospects and in terms of their relationship prospects. So there are fewer people under the age of 30 who are in a relationship, even if it's just having a boyfriend or girlfriend. People are having less sex. There might be still a decent amount of hookups, but even that seems to be happening less. So there's something that's changing in terms of people's attitudes towards dating and finding a partner. Mm-hmm. And to your point about sometimes from the side of women, if there's like a pretty long list of requirements, there are a lot of men that aren't meeting that list. Either, you know, make enough money, or they're not conscious enough, or you fill in the blanks, probably things that you've heard about. The good thing about this is that we are creating probably a more equal society. But part of what is happening is that might mean that for certain groups of young men, their prospects aren't actually quite as shiny as they were historically. So maybe their fathers and grandfathers were able to buy a property, or maybe they worked in a job that gave them some security for life, and maybe they were able to find a partner and settle down. And for a lot of young men, that is not actually happening. So that's probably part of the shift towards some populism. It's part of probably the shift towards a certain base that supports Trump. And this is something that we've also got to figure out a little bit as a society, is how do we honor the achievements and gains of women and continue to push to champion for girls and women to do what they want to do with their lives, including opening up things like engineering and military and things that historically those pathways have been less open? And how do we notice that there might be some difficult things that young men are going through? And how do we validate their experience and care enough about it and provide provide the right sort of approach and resources? So these are kind of complex questions, but I think it's important. How can we love on men and women at the same time would be a simple way of what I'm saying. Like, young women have issues and mental health has been a thing, and teens and Instagram and anxiety and suicide being a leading cause of death in young people, men and women. And how do we also acknowledge, yeah, if you're like a 25-year-old guy and you haven't had a job in 3 years and you've got a bunch of college debt, or maybe you didn't go to college, no girl really wants to date you, and she's on dating apps seemingly going after, quote, more successful men, you know, the sort of top 5% of profiles attracting most of the attention, then yeah, maybe you don't feel particularly seen and loved and that you've got a stake in society. And generally, it's not a great thing if a whole bunch of young men don't feel like they've got a stake in society in a future. That's not a recipe for a successful society.
Yes, so interesting. We could, again, do a whole episode just on that too. I know we did one not too long ago on loneliness and interdependence and men who come on strong and then get distant. I think that was the title, where we talked about some of these themes where a lot of people are in these conditions where they're not as interested in relationships as maybe they used to be and things like that. We talked for over an hour on that, so everyone can go check that out if they're interested. This was great. I know we're over on time, but are there any last words of wisdom you want to share here today on this topic before we close out?
Well, I just want to appeal to an orientation that connecting with people that think, feel, and act a bit differently than you is good for them, because the more we show people our empathy, they tend to like it. People like to feel heard and seen. And it's also really good for you. And I meet people who are quite worried about where we're going as a society, right? People are talking about, could there be civil war? What's going to happen after the election? How do we deal with climate change? We've got deaths of despair. We've got lots of things to worry about. But like, one thing that you can do in your world is just notice, how much are you building a bridge with people that maybe historically you haven't been so connected to, or that perhaps honestly turn you off a little bit? Like, how can you appeal to the better angels of your nature to dig deep into your inner work? Because real inner work isn't separating yourself off in an elite yoga studio. Real inner work is actually being with the discomfort and frustration and limitation of being a human, and how to love yourself and other people. So I'm kind of saying, hey, I want you to go love on some people, and go love on some people that you find it hard to love. That's your curriculum. That's your best inner work. Let's go.
I love it. Such important work. And where can people get a hold of you if they're interested in private coaching? Talk a little bit more about that. And I'll include a link. That'll be the first link in the show notes. And of course, you can use my name, Helena, as the promo code, or in the Where Did You Hear About Me section for a discount, right?
Yeah, just click that link. You can find out a little bit about what I do and what I help people with. You know, most of my work is helping people be more real and authentic and kind of growing their self-leadership capacity. I work as a transformational coach, which means I help people transform their way of being, and particularly in the direction of their own authenticity. So if you know that there's things that have held you back, perhaps you're living an outdated story or identity, or perhaps you show up in social situations with a particular social persona, like you're the pleaser or you're the good listener, but it's not very fulfilling to you, I'm good at helping people relax those structures so that their true self can come forward more fully. That's the work that I do. And then the other thing I often help people with, if you know that you're stuck on something or someone, I'm good at helping people find the sobriety and non-attachment to release something that's no longer serving them. So if you've got a crush on a guy, but he's not showing up for a relationship, for instance, perhaps you're still stuck on your ex and it's getting in the way of your dating, I can help you deal with that. So we'd love to hear from anyone this is resonating with.
That sounds amazing. So again, that'll be the first link in the show notes. I hope you want to come back and do more episodes soon. I had so much fun doing this different topic today. Just so great. I didn't know if I would have anything to even contribute, but I love the direction of the conversation. And I just think this is so important to talk about. We could do a part two sometime, or anything else you'd like to talk about. I'd love to bring you back on.
Thank you. And thanks for going with the new topic. And it's been great to explore it with you. And I love the way that you brought all these different threads in and back to dating, et cetera. So this has been really gratifying for me. And thanks everyone for being here with us.
Yes. And for everyone listening, make sure you're following my podcast. Just click the follow button on my podcast homepage. I have new episodes coming out every week, so you don't want to miss those. And feel free to leave me a rating or write a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. 5-star ratings help my podcast out a lot. It helps it get recommended to more people so we can spread this message of self-love and empowerment and authenticity. This was great. Thanks again, Jack. Hope we can do this again soon.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
The biggest mistake women make when a man is hot and cold, acting distant, or pulling away is something called a connection barrier, and it only pushes him further away. If you'd like to read about what a connection barrier is so you don't accidentally make it, go to forever1234.com. Again, that's forever1234.com.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are.
Go, 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 go! With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43-9267-V1.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Did you know that skincare can start in the laundry room? All Free Clear is the number one laundry detergent brand recommended by dermatologists, allergists, and pediatricians for sensitive skin. All Free Clear is 100% free of dyes and perfumes. It provides an effective clean that's gentle on skin while removing impurities like dirt and body oil without leaving irritating residues. Plus, All Free Clear liquid is Safer Choice certified by the US EPA. For a clean you can feel good about, all you need is All Free Clear.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.